hip, hip. Knock. Dream. Fashion. Here she goes. Head the whiskey. Dick route. Pull a stout. You hear? Ha ha. Snag him up. Dream him up. Bash him up. Let him have it. Making pipe. Hitting tight.
Without exception, there'll be death. Now here it is again, in the stone underfoot, unstable. And the island perseveres, sustaining the persistent loss of its mass, 150 million years in formation. What remains of the island of Portland reveals an inherent negativity, morbidity preserved. Here the quarryman's daughters negotiate its primal contours, holding hands and keeping each other safe. The two sisters will establish a debased rhythm, while our young gravedigger turns the earth and stumbles. The quarryman had two daughters, Celestine and Hazeline. Celestine and Hazeline once strove to do something their father would recognize as worthwhile. By the time they reached their 30s, their desire to please was behind them.
I should really have been a quarryman. Like Dad and his dad and all their dads. But I was a girl, so it was never going to work out.
It was never going to work out.
Not back then, anyway.
I'm not what was expected, either.
Why the fuck should we be what's expected?
It's Hazeline Horrocks. She lives in one of the beach huts at Church Hope. I know something else about her. I know she met the loss adjusters one day, out in the quarry. It was a peculiar encounter. She had her hand against a stone when they approached her.
I know you're hiding something, Hazy.
Yeah, I do have something to confess. After we walked together last time, we said goodbye, and I carried on deeper into the quarry. I was lost for a while, and when I stepped out into the open air, I had a really peculiar encounter with two men and a woman who work in Easton. They call themselves loss adjusters.
They said they were interested in sensually engaged absences, and that they were trying to uncover any evidence of explicit bodily encounters on the island. Their suggestion was that such experiences are some kind of compensation for the displacement of the island's physicality.
They said that they'd got the measure of the gravedigger, but they wanted to understand who I was and what I was doing there, things like that, but it was peculiar. Like an interrogation.
It sounds like they were conducting research, and on you of all people, Hazy.
First adjuster kept questioning her, and then something strange happened.
He asked if I'd ever felt the earth moving, then he just came right out with it.
You've utterly abandoned yourself. You're empty and limitless. Completely aware and conscious of your physicality, because the stone's being removed from under our feet. It's disappearing. It is being cut out and displaced, and has been for centuries. It's destabilizing, isn't it? Is that how you understand it?
I got this overwhelming feeling of being examined, but at the same time wanting to be pressed between him and the stone.
I bet she wanted to be pressed between him and the stone.
I kneeled in the dirt.
She kneeled in the dirt.
That's when the woman cut in. She said that I'd abandoned myself and that I was empty and limitless. She said that because the stone was being taken away from under my feet, I was becoming more aware of my physicality. I stood up with my sore, scraped knees, then hitched up my skirt and leaned back. There was cold stone against my naked backside. Then they started to work in formation. The second male adjuster stepped up to my right side, stopped and dropped his trousers. He put one of his legs out to cross mine, but he stayed fixed in that awkward open stride. Then he reached across my body and pressed his palm into my breast. His dick was pointing straight at me, so I clutched it. Of course I did, although I still kept one hand on the rock behind.
This female adjuster.
The woman, who now stood to my left, took hold of my left thigh with both hands. She lifted it up, and I know I'm no waif, but it was like she had to support a tremendous weight, because she positioned herself with one leg stretched out behind her, and the other, closest to me, was bent at the knee to help her arms take the strain. As for my thigh, she managed to haul it towards my chest, leaving my lower limb hanging and my body exposed. The three of us were lined up like that when I noticed the other man. He was just standing there, staring at my hole. I told him to fuck me. And when he did, he was so hard and his movement so rhythmic, it was like he was riveting us all into place and we were fixed in that arrangement like a relief. It was weird. I couldn't move for ages.
Here they are again, left for dead. The quarryman's daughters, themselves lost, are out of time, while the young gravedigger continues to work, preceded by death without exception. Now here it is again, brought back to the surface, a raw elemental exposure underfoot, destabilizing. To us it came as no surprise when that evening a passionate force swept across the island. A full-grown runaway horse galloped southward with a mind to take the coast path, its heavy hooves powered down and into the ground. Possessed by a nonsensical rage, the animal shook not only the stone, but also the volatile bed of Kimmeridge clay beneath it.
Hazeline looked at the land.
Celestine watched the sea.
The one looking landward saw movement.
The other did not.
Nor did she see the horse that raced along the clifftop, hell-bent. By the time it reached the west weir, its power was of a singular intensity. That horse kept running until it dropped, and not a moment of its existence was ever registered by Celestine. She failed to notice the gigantic stone that teetered and then fell as the horse passed. The impact of this ancient mass, tumbling, hitting others, sending them cascading, all the while accompanied by Hazeline's urgent screams, none of this was enough to alert her sister. It gathered speed, and its terrible weight finally came down upon Celestine's home. The hut disintegrated.
I chased the stone down the incline, then stood and stared at the debris. It was dreadful. Through that whole evening, I watched helicopters arrive in. There were medical teams. People came with lifting equipment. They managed to lift the boulder from the wreckage, only to set it rolling again, and off it went, unstoppable, until it plunged into the sea. They tried their best, but couldn't get it back. I imagined a body compressed into the stone, all crushed and intermingled with the lime. I had no choice but to let that stone absorb your death.
I can see a woman with a plait in her hair. It's the quarryman's daughter, without her sister. And there's the gravedigger again. Their paths are going to cross, almost as if they can't see each other. And now they're moving out of sight, like they're disappearing into a hole. All our paths crossed, but we're in a vanishing world. I'd better get back to number 52.
Everything that flourished here in the Jurassic period, vital and fully expanded, ultimately perished, became compacted and compressed under the weight of new existence, until solidification preserved the remains and finally transformed them into Portland stone.
And the island perseveres, sustaining the persistent loss of its mass, 150 million years in formation. A vanishing presence, it appears to be a resource just adequate for its purposes, at other times a monument to loss. Now, here it is again. In the stone underfoot, unstable.